You've been sold the idea that financial independence is all about some number on your account statement, or even worse, that you don't qualify because of where you started out. That's just not true. It's not about some well-kept secret of the wealthy. It's about finding the right information and knowing how to apply it. On the Get Ready for the Future show, we're answering your questions so you can start making real financial change today. The journey to true financial independence begins right here, and it starts with you.
Hey, and welcome into another edition of the Get Ready for the Future show, here to help people discover, protect, and share true financial independence. Glad to have you along. My name is Scott Inman, Janet Walker with me on the show today as we answer your questions as we do each and every week on the Get Ready for the Future show. If you've got one, you can send it to us by calling and leaving a voicemail or shooting us a text to this number, 501-381-5228. Again, it's 501-381-5228. Or email us, just send it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. And if you do that right now, we may use your question on the air next week. Hey, before we dive in to this week's show, Janet, I do want to say a quick thank you to everybody that came out earlier this week for our Social Security workshop in Little Rock. Matt Emanuel, thanks again to Matt for being our special guest speaker on that. He's really good at that presentation. Yeah, He's done it dozens and dozens of times.
He has, and I think there's really very good information in there every time that he shares that for people to be able to learn about Social Security. And I know everybody came away learning something this week from him.
Yeah, I asked him, so how many people are you used to, you know, presenting this in front of? And he said he's done it for as few as four and as many as 150.
There you go.
We were somewhere in between that number. But I know everybody gained something, so I wanted to say thanks to many of clients in the room and soon-to-be clients in the room. Thanks for coming out. And for those of you who missed it, there is another opportunity for a GenWealth Academy workshop coming up next week. It's on estate planning. It's in Hot Springs. To get the details on that, just go to getreadyforthefuture.com/academy. You can see that upcoming workshop and all the other ones that we have along the way, and you can sign up. They're always free to attend, and there's always something to learn for you at those workshops. And we hope you learned something today on the show. And I think, Janet, it's safe to say the questions today, the questions this week, all kind of have a theme. We're kind of going down the same path.
They do. We're going to talk a lot today about income and how practical or impractical it might be, depending on what your situation is.
Yep. So let's dive in. Catherine from Hot Springs is first up on the show. I'm 51 and have $750,000 and have an advisor. But after listening to your show for a while, I've realized there's not a plan for turning it into retirement income. It makes me nervous that I may not have enough. How do you know what to withdraw and when? Catherine, perfectly normal to be nervous if you do not have a plan. And I think that's the first thing that stands out to me is sometimes people who have an advisor, Janet, think they have a plan, right, but really don't. But Catherine here recognizes that she does not have a plan, and that's a big red flag.
There is a clear distinction in our minds, although many people don't see it, but there is a clear distinction between having a pool of investments and working with an advisor on what to buy and what to sell, you know, as you're growing those assets, and having a written plan on paper on purpose that is going to help you determine what to sell when it comes time to take income. Scott, we're going to dive into some details on this and give some examples in just a moment that will be really pretty powerful in terms of understanding how important this is. Scott, I know you had a story about a client who had a very unusual question from his previous advisor.
Yeah, it is not all that uncommon. You know, when people come to us, oftentimes they do not have a current advisor, but sometimes they do, and they are struggling with some of the things that they're dealing with that advisor. And I think withdrawal strategy, income planning, is a huge gap in the financial services industry. I had a client who came in and said that they had needed to make a withdrawal from their investments. And they asked the advisor to make that withdrawal for them. And the advisor actually asked them, what do you want to sell? Well, that's the advisor's job. That should not be the client's job. The advisor should be working on more than just investments. But unfortunately, Janet, that's the way it works, is the focus is on investments. And it might be a very good investment strategy, might be very diversified, might be great. But will it stand the test of your retirement, pulling out withdrawals over a long period of time?
And unfortunately, it's really hard to know if you just have a withdrawal percentage, you know, that you're using. And there is in this industry something called the 4% rule. We would call it a rule of dumb rather than a rule of thumb, because it's not how we're going to approach your retirement income at all. But let me walk through an example on this, and then we're going to look at some actual numbers of what would have occurred if you had retired at a couple of different points in history. But let me go back to 2008. I think everybody who is approaching retirement probably remembers that year quite well and what happened in the market. The market was down 40%. Now, to be clear, I'm not talking about anybody's particular plan, but if you had 100% of your assets in the S&P, which I hope you don't when you get to the point of retirement, but if you had 100% of your dollars invested in that way, this is what this would look like. And we're just using that as an example because it's really easy math to understand this concept. And frankly, it is what a lot of people do. They just have a pool of money and they're withdrawing a percentage from that pool of money, regardless of what that gives them in any given year in terms of performance. So for easy math, let's start with $1 million and say you have that invested and you're going to take this 4% withdrawal rate. So 4% off of $1 million means that you're withdrawing $40,000 a year, and everything's rolling along and life's fine until it's not. 2008 hits. The market is down 40%, so your $1 million is now no longer $1 million. It is now $600,000. So you have a choice to make. You can either continue the 4% withdrawal rate, but it would be 4% of $600,000 and therefore a withdrawal amount of $24,000. Or you can say, no, we're not going to take a pay decrease from $40,000 to $24,000. We're going to stick with the $40,000. Well, that $40,000 now is off of $600,000. So instead of a 4% withdrawal rate, it is a 6.7% withdrawal rate. Here's the math on that. The fact is, you're going to run out of money if you go through the rest of retirement with this 6.7% withdrawal rate. There's no way to make that work. So we know that this doesn't work, but let's look at actual examples. We've got a graphic we're going to share with you. And the only difference between these two retirees is when they retired. So let's kind of set the stage here. One of them retires in 1966. One of them retires in 1976. They each retire with $500,000. They have a typical 60-40 scenario in terms of how their assets are allocated. And I'll say typical for the industry, not typical for GenWealth. And if you'll notice that in year one, Investor A, who retires in 1966, he has a negative return of 5.3%. Scott, you and I were talking about this before the show started. That's not like a horrifically bad return. It's not anywhere close to what investors saw in 2008.
Right.
And if you look at the worst year he actually saw was in 1974, and that was down 15%. But here's the key. This negative return happened in his first year of retirement, and he was also taking a distribution. And so you have the compounded effect of his withdrawal rate and the negative rate of return. And you'll see his balance never actually even touches again what he invested originally, as opposed to the person on the right, investor B, who has a positive return in the first year. And then there's a slightly negative one. You'll see there are negative returns added into this over the years as well. But look at how much this person winds up with. They wind up with over three times as much as what they started with. At age 85, they've got $1.7 million, where investor A at age 81 has run completely out of money.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, here's the point of this. We don't know what your sequence of return is going to be. We don't know if the first year in your retirement is going to be like a 1966 or a 1976, a 2008, or a really positive return. We don't know what that's going to be. So we have to build a plan that, Catherine, will work for you and your withdrawal regardless of what the investments are going to bring you in terms of return early in retirement.
So her question, how do you know what to withdraw and when? It needs to be more dynamic in terms of where you are actually taking your withdrawals from. It's not one pie. Your assets are not in one pool of money, but rather they are in segments or buckets, if you will, multiple accounts spread out over multiple investment strategies with a conservative strategy from the bucket you are currently pulling money from. Market risk is mostly, if not all, off the table in this bucket so that you can know if I'm pulling out $2,000 a month, that's going to happen because the value of that bucket is not going to be reduced while you're pulling it out. And then the risk increases a little bit for each bucket that you step out in time. So if you've got money, dollars allocated for a 5-year hold, you can take a little more risk. If you've got monies allocated for a 10-year hold before you use it, you can take a little bit more risk. And then the growth buckets, the equity buckets in the strategy are set to be 15 years and longer before you ever tap into them. So the idea here is if you have some of those negative returns in the equity market, like we showed you on that graphic, nothing will be sold because you are letting it grow for at least 15 years.
Scott, I wish I'd thought about this in advance to check the date. If this is not dead on accurate, it's pretty close. I think that today is actually the 15-year anniversary of the low point in the market after 2008, because I believe it was on March 6th of 2009. If that wasn't it, it's early March. Mm-hmm. I think it was March 6th, but here's the point. If you had been in a bucketed strategy here at GenWealth during that period of time, it would not be until now that you would be getting into that later bucket of assets. And at this point, when you look at what, you know, those growth-oriented investments, obviously they would have gone down in 2008, hit that low point in March of 2009, but now it's as though it never happened. And since you didn't have to take income from that bucket, it's had plenty of time to recover. Again, it's like it never happened.
About a 400% bounce since that low in March of 2009, 15 years ago. Here's the bottom line for Catherine and for everybody else listening who may be nervous that you don't have enough money for retirement. There is a Mass Mutual survey that we referenced in one of our other pieces a couple of weeks ago. And the survey asked, based on what you know today, how many years do you believe your income in retirement can sustain you? 36% of the respondents said 0 to 10 years. Now, they may not have saved enough for retirement. There may be no way around the fact that it's going to run out in 0 to 10 years. But how do they know that? Why do they think that? 27% answered 11 to 20 years. So said another way, 63% of the people who answered that question believe their money will run out in 20 years or less. That's why people are nervous and afraid if they have enough. I would say that most of the people that answered that survey don't have a specific retirement income plan.
Right.
It shows your monthly income from day one with cost of living adjustments over time. And Catherine, that's what I would suggest that you do. And you can reach out to us and get started in that process. We're going to, in the meantime, name your question the question of the week. And for that, Catherine, we'd love to send you a free Get Ready for the Future Show Tumblr. For being the question of the week, just send us an email to claim it. You can send it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. All right, Ricky from Benton is up next. I'm 45 and honestly have no idea where I stand when it comes to retirement. I've got 401ks left at old jobs that I haven't looked at in years, and I tend to be an it'll all work out kind of guy. I've been listening to you guys since the end of last year, and I'm realizing I might be behind or fine. Who knows? What do I do to get things in order and figure out where I stand? Well, Ricky, 45 is a good time to start doing that. You're starting to close in probably in the next few years into your retirement red zone, which becomes a crucial time in shifting your plan anyway from an investment strategy that is full on accumulation to a more diversified strategy that is about distribution. Because when you think about it, it'll all work out. Kind of guy. You know, if you're that person, it can work out when you are strictly accumulating inside of 401ks. Yeah. There are great growth vehicles inside of 401ks that can get you there if you stay disciplined, mm-hmm. you're in the right growth strategy, and you don't ever stop putting money in. But it does start to change when you get closer to that retirement red zone.
Well, and frankly, one of the reasons it all works out on the accumulation side is, like you said, the discipline of contributing, but many times you're also getting a match. And, you know, we've had people come in and go, hey, my 401k is performing better than this investment here. And it's like, no, when you really look at it, it's because of the match.
Yes.
And people just don't even really think about that. So you can accidentally be very successful in your accumulation. But as we looked at with Catherine's question on the previous question that we just did, there is really a difference when you get to that distribution phase. And so, Ricky, I got to say, I even loved just the casualness of the of the question. Like, I tend to be an it'll all work out kind of guy. I would encourage you to get a plan to make sure that there is a plan for it to all work out, because there are, and I'm sure you've dealt with this, Ricky, in other areas of your life, there are things where you can be more laid back and casual about it. And then there are things where you need to, for a period of time, and it doesn't have to be this way all the time, but for a period of time, you need to focus and go, okay, what is necessary for me to be more certain that this will all work out?
Yeah, nothing unusual about not knowing where you're at if you don't know where you're going. And I think that's what the planning process can do for Ricky and anybody in that same age frame. You know, you're starting to think about it. You're 45. I turned 51 on Sunday. So I know where your mindset is at, but the mindset has to shift from a number on a page, or, and in your case, many numbers, because he says he's got multiple 401ks left at old jobs, but you have one overall number. But what does that really mean to you? And the planning process helps you figure that out through a conversation with a financial advisor about what kind of income needs and what kind of income wants are you going to have at that certain age in the future. Maybe it's 65, maybe it's 60. That's the first question you have to ask, Ricky, is when are you going to retire? And when are you going to start pulling the trigger on taking withdrawals from your life savings? And at that point, what does income look like? Do you have a pension? Do you have two Social Security checks? How is your Social Security strategy going to take shape? What kind of guaranteed income sources do you have? We call that the floor. It is the required income. And we use a house analogy to describe that. So if you think about building a house, Ricky, when you lay the foundation of the house, it is the least impressive to look at, but the most important piece of building that house correctly, right? It's kind of boring. But if it's not done right, nothing else is going to matter. Same goes for retirement. You have to build foundational income, and that is guaranteed income from those sources that we referenced a moment ago, and that needs to be able to cover your basic expenses in retirement. Because here's the deal. If there's a certain amount of cash flow going out the door, there has to be a certain amount of cash flow coming in that is guaranteed and not subject to market volatility. So you got to check that box. And then we can move on to the fun part of retirement, which is the building of the house, Janet, the rooms that are made, and the desired income. What does your retirement look like? What kind of things do you want to do? And we help people monetize that, figure out how much it's going to cost.
Ricky, one of the things that you should probably take some time to consider is making an intentional decision about the 401ks that you have currently. I think if I had to guess based on you describing yourself as an it'll all work out kind of guy, I think that rather than making an intentional decision to leave these 401ks behind, you have made an unintentional decision. My husband has a phrase that I love, that if you don't make a decision, then your indecision will become your decision. And I think that that's how you've arrived at this point of just leaving them behind, because anytime that someone changes a job, you have four choices as far as what to do with your, I'm going to say, corporate retirement plan. For you, it's a 401k. For others, it might be something different. But your corporate retirement plan, you have four choices at that point. One choice is to cash it out. Obviously, I'm just going to be real clear. We're not fans of that, because you have to deal with taxes, and because you're not age 59 and a half yet, you also have to deal with penalties. So not something that we would encourage, but just to know it is an option. So cashing them out, you can leave it alone, which is, Ricky, what you've done thus far, and it might still be what you want to do, but I would encourage you to make an intentional decision about that. And then the other two choices are to roll it into your new corporate retirement plan, assuming that the new plan gives that as an option for them to accept it, or you might also want to roll it to an IRA. And we usually just generically say IRA. There likely is these days a need for you to roll that to partially traditional and partially Roth IRAs, because you probably have a mixture of those types of dollars in your plan. We don't know that for sure without having seen your information, but it is becoming more and more common. So you do have those four choices. And Ricky, like I said, I would just encourage you to be intentional about looking at those dollars and deciding what you want to do rather than letting your indecision become your decision.
Yeah, so one of the things you considering when you're looking at whether I roll that over, the 401k into an IRA, you know, if the 401ks are very limited in their investment options. The average is about 8 to 10 these days. Most of them are target date funds, and that may or may not be where all of your money needs to be. So you can really get a more robust investment strategy in preparation for your retirement by taking a look at that. But you need to consult with an advisor, and we'd be happy to do that for you to go over your options again and find out what really is best for you. But certainly planning is the number one thing in the answer to that question. All right, our final question from Katie in Maumel today. I'm 47 and recently inherited nearly $1 million in an IRA. I'm worried about tax implications and the right way to go about getting the money out within the 10-year withdrawal period. Got any advice? Well, Katie, you're aware of the 10-year withdrawal period, so that's obviously the cause for your question. Do want to tell everybody else a little bit, just kind of an overview. And we've talked about it on this show before, but if you're listening and you hear Katie say the 10-year withdrawal rule, what does that mean? Well, that's a recent change to the way inherited IRAs must be withdrawn. Came in 2020. So prior to that, you could do what's called a stretch. So if your father passed away, your mother passed away, and you received the funds, in Katie's case, almost $1 million, she could stretch that $1 million out through required minimum distributions based on her life expectancy. So it might be a pretty minimal amount, at least now when she's 47 years old, and it would increase over time, which would be able to deflect some of the tax burden or defer some of the tax burden because she wouldn't be taking lump sums out. Well, the government changed that rule in 2020, and now in a next generation, if someone is 10 years or more younger than the person who died, they have to take it out. There are some exceptions to that, but generally speaking, they have to take it out in a 10-year time frame. So in essence, Katie has to take this money out, $1 million over a 10-year time frame. Now, we do want to talk about a few exceptions, though, because it's more than just the 10 years. Not everybody is included in this.
First of all, to clarify, we're talking about non-spouse beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Spouses fall under a different set of rules. And Scott, you mentioned the 10-year gap. So let's talk about siblings. You might have siblings that are more than 10 years apart, but very often they're going to be within that 10-year range. So if you inherit something from a sibling, you're within 10 years of each other. And it doesn't have to be a sibling. That's just a good example. But if you're within 10 years of the decedent, then you do not have to fall under this 10-year rule that, as Scott said, started back in 2020. There's also some exceptions for disability or chronically ill people and for children who are under age 21. So beyond that, we want to talk about what do you do with this money? And, you know, Katie, as you get into you're in your late 40s now, as you're finishing this out into your 50s, you're going to be in some of your highest earning years, assuming that you're working. If that is the case, that is historically a very high earning time period for most people. And so you're receiving this money that is taxable through the inheritance on top of high earnings years. And so it's really important to work with your financial advisor and potentially even with your CPA to get a strategic plan on how you want to attack this. Generically, and this is, again, without knowing really what your situation is, you really want to take out a tenth of it the first year, a ninth of it the second year. And I know that sounds weird. Instead of a tenth, a tenth, a tenth. But the way you work it down to zero is one-tenth, one-ninth, one-eighth, et cetera, until you get down to the full in the last of the time period, you're going to withdraw all of it. And that way you're spreading out these tax implications as much as possible. But then, Scott, we really want to cover what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Because, yes, you have to expose it to taxes. You have to pay the taxes on it, but you don't have to spend it. This money can then be utilized to really move you forward financially.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to the planning process. Talking with an advisor to figure out where are the priorities here. Obviously, you can put some of this money back for your retirement. But before you get to that, is there some debt that needs to be wiped out? And we can help you work through what types of debt should be prioritized and whether it should be allocated, this money that you're withdrawing from the IRA. Is college a big priority for you for your kids? We talked about debt. Maybe the mortgage could be is even close enough to being wiped out. And then you look at investing for retirement. And when you look at it as a holistic approach, you can kind of say, okay, if we do the, we wipe out the debt and take care of the kids' college, and this goes to retirement, what does that look like when you reach retirement from an income perspective? And we can shuffle the deck again and take it, take a look at it in multiple ways. But the key is not to spend it, but you're going to have to pay the taxes on it. But you can start to prioritize what you do with the money. And if in, and the money that gets invested for retirement, you have some options there. Certainly, if you're eligible for a Roth IRA, I think you're not going to get a whole lot in that because there are pretty strict limits on how much you can put in a year's time. But if you're married, you can double that. So you could fully contribute to two Roth IRAs if you're, if you don't make too much money, because there are income restrictions on that. And then you can go to non-retirement brokerage or advisory accounts that can be taxable along the way, but still grow your dollars for retirement. And then there's also tax deferral vehicles as an option too, like annuities. You can put money into an annuity in lump sum that in essence turns the taxation on it into what would be just like an IRA. You would take money out at 59 and a half, so it would be appropriated for retirement. So there are lots of options there to get that money back in and grow back, in essence, Janet, what you might have lost in the taxation of the IRA.
I'm going to use my final thoughts to stay on Katie's question here for just a moment. From a parenting perspective, this is something that we've done for each of our kids, not every year, but from time to time. When they have worked and earned income, we've allowed them to keep that money for what they needed or wanted to do. But then we have put some of that money into, and not their dollars, but our dollars. We've put dollars into a Roth IRA for them because they had the earned income. They could have contributed, but they needed it for whatever else that they were doing in their teenage stage of life. But when you look at the difference, Katie, that that can make for them long term, if you have all of your other ducks in a row, so to speak, and that is a possibility for you for your overall family financial planning, that is absolutely something you may want to consider if they have earned income, is to just make that contribution on their behalf.
Yeah, my final thought is we've mentioned the word plan a lot today. We mentioned the word plan a lot on this show, and I think you can become a little tone deaf to that when you listen to the show over a long period of time. But why is it important? When you think about, hey, we're entering into spring break next week and I'm taking my kids on a vacation, and we've spent a little time planning that vacation. Yep. Now, it can be fun to just show up, but you're going to have to be prepared to not know what to expect, right? And it's the same for retirement. It's the same for any financial goal that you want to meet. Planning helps you understand what you're trying to accomplish better and gives you a path and a roadmap to get there. And I would just encourage everybody listening today, if you haven't built a retirement income plan, reach out to us here and get ready to go through the GenWealth Ready to Retire process. You can do that by just calling 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526 to set up your first appointment with a GenWealth financial advisor near you. And that is all the time we have for this week's show. Our thanks to Katie and Catherine and Ricky to sending in those questions. And we want to hear from you. Call or text a question to us at 501-381-5228 or send us an email, show@getreadyforthefuture.com. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Get Ready for the Future show. If you enjoy hearing from the GenWealth team every week, make sure and subscribe to the podcast. And you can always find us on social media. Search for GenWealth Financial Advisors on Facebook or on Twitter at GenWealthFA. The GenWealth Financial Team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or call our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and GenWealth Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.